I want to offer my welcome to everybody. These kind of gatherings continue to remain rare events. I was commenting to Jonathan, I was like, who are these people? You know, it's like, why are they here? What has brought them here? All these conditions and heart processes and thought processes, you know, makes me extremely interested in every one of you, you know. Because not many people endeavor to take the time to explore their hearts and minds and to take a look at their various habituations. And, you know, it's not what we do here together is beautiful, and it's not so easy. So I want to honor you all here and welcome you. And I want to talk just a few minutes about the refuges. How many people have even heard of the refuges? Just something, okay. It's an ancient kind of tradition in Buddhism to take the refuges. And personally, I take them every day. I say them out loud. And oftentimes, they can be very practical. They're useful. You know, we all have these moments in our lives where we kind of know we're going to lose it a little bit. It's like, you know, oh, these are the conditions where I just kind of get neurotic or a little off, you know. For me, one of them is like getting ready to come to a retreat. You know, you start making these lists of things that you have to do and take care of, you know, and it's like, and you go to the next page and you're making a list. And so I know that at some point during this process, there's going to be like this kind of freak out, a little neurotic, you know, where I start to come unglued, get identified, you know, stuck. And those are the moments, if I can remember, to take refuge. Just a pause, you know. Take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Where if I can remember one of those gems and just reflect on it for a moment, my whole relationship to my life changes, settles, opens, slows a little bit. You know, so this is good, practical, useful stuff. And when we consider taking refuge in the Buddha, you can reflect on the historical Buddha. That person who I would consider maybe the greatest teacher that's walked the earth, taught for 40 years, and he did walk. He never rode in a cart. He never allowed himself to be pulled by a beast of burden. And he cultivated and exhibited extraordinary compassion and wisdom. So you can kind of reflect and kind of take blessing in that historical person, or you can reflect on your own Buddha nature, your own capacity for compassion, for clear seeing, for understanding. And you know what that feels like when there are those moments or those times where you're not fearful, you're not pressed, your heart is open. You know, you're seeing clearly. You're acting skillfully for the benefit of others. That nature is there. And it often gets veiled over, and we're going to spend time talking about some of the energies, the temporary energies that come and kind of wash over us. So for moments or periods of time, it's like, Buddha nature? I had a Buddha. Where did it go? You know. But it's there. It's inherent. We don't have to create it. And then there's taking refuge in the Dharma. On one level, you can say, oh, all the teachings, you know, all the wonderful teachings which now are really being discovered in the West. It's like almost every kind of new growth modality, when I see it, I say, oh, more applied Buddhism. Oh, more applied Buddhism over here. Mindfulness this, mindfulness that. So we can take refuge in these teachings. But really, when you fundamentally boil down these teachings, we're really taking refuge in the nature of nature. Learning more about how this creation works. Learning how to not resist it and to be more in the flow of what's been offered to us in this lifetime. So the Dharma can be seen as nature. And we're learning about nature, seeing clearly and kind of getting in the flow of it, not resisting so much. And then we can take refuge in the Sangha. You know, all those people for all these generations that have brought these teachings to us, that have cultivated a heart and a mind that's free. You know, there's a legacy. We are the living edge of this. I always use this analogy, many of you have heard it, but of the coral reef. You know, coral reef is built on the exoskeletons of thousands and thousands and thousands of creatures over thousands of years in some cases. But on the very outer edge is this beautiful, living, vibrant, colorful, active flow of just dynamic life. So that's us with the practice. We've got our time in the sun. It's limited. Our community here is limited. And our time alive to practice is limited. So we, in a sense, we can put ourselves under the blessing of all these beings who practiced before us. All these beings that are practicing right now. So, another way to look at taking refuge, I mean, what do we do when we're taking refuge? In one way, we're affirming our commitment to abandon this egocentric view, this egocentric vision of our life. We're looking into the way that we hold on and grasp, and cultivating ways to let go. And when we do that, we're in a sense moving into the unknown. There can be some fear. There can be some doubt. You know, what would it be like if I started letting go of some of these habits that I have? Some of this grasping. So it requires courage. But all of you have that, otherwise you wouldn't be here. You know, I believe that wholeheartedly. So we're stepping off the edge in a way, looking at the kind of egocentric habituations and vision that we have. And we're trusting that when we try on some new behavior, some new ways of seeing and being, that everything isn't going to fall apart on us. That we actually can let go, and our life and the planet and the solar system will continue in its flow and creation. And so sometimes asking for refuge, there's a little misunderstanding that can come up. I mean, in on one level, on the simple mundane level, we're kind of asking for protection. We're maybe wanting things to go smoothly, kind of wanting conditions to be favorable. But on a deeper, more fundamental level, we're asking for protection from the ego, not protection for the ego. Because often there's that kind of schizophrenic polar opposites where we want to let go, and then at the same time we want to hold on to everything, to all the things that we grasp onto. And so out of that comes a little bit of fear. So that's what we work with. That's part of what we're going to be doing this week. So we ask protection when we take the refuge, protection for our spiritual work. And for that, we give back. We offer the sincerity of our practice, and we offer that practice for the benefit of all beings. So the traditional way of taking the refuges, and I think you may have chant sheets, I see them out around you. And that's in Pali, for those who haven't seen it before. And I actually don't have a sheet up here, but there may be is there a translation on there? Good, okay. Does everybody have a sheet? So those of you that are new at this, you can just follow along. And we've got a lot of old hands here. So if you'd like, bring your hands together. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddham saranam gacchami. Dhammang saranam gacchami. Sangham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi buddham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi sangham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi buddham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi sangham saranam gacchami.
I'll be brief. We've been here for an hour and a half. It's a joy to be with you. Today's my birthday. And and there's no place on this planet I would rather be than here with you, doing what we're doing, because we're practicing freedom. And I can't think of anything more important or more meaningful to do. In the next few days, we are going to create the society we want to see in the world. And I say that with confidence because we've done it again and again and again in these retreats. It's a society that cares, that is kind and supportive. We do that through inclusion, and we do it through kindness. Tara mentioned in her welcoming that anyone of any identity is equally welcome here. Our larger society tends to exclude people because of race or gender or sexual identity or ability or social class. Everyone is included equally in the society, and everyone is cherished equally in the society. And we're kind to each other. This kindness is really important, because in order for people to awaken, they have to open. And in order to open, they have to feel safe. And in order to feel safe, they have to be in a safe environment. We create safety and this sense of kindness through our commitment to 5 ancient trainings, which are the foundation of our practice. Trainings in non-harming. So we'd like to ask you in the time that we're here together to do these 5 trainings, not only for your own sake, but for the sake of all of us. So while we're here together, please refrain from killing or committing physical violence toward any living being, but instead make an effort to practice kindness. So avoiding stepping on an insect, for example, or catching an insect and putting it out. What would this planet be like if all 7+ billion of us made that commitment to avoid physical violence and killing? We could turn the Pentagon into low-cost housing. And the second training, during this time that we're here together, to refrain from, in the old language, taking what isn't freely given, that is, to avoid theft, but instead to practice generosity. So we're saying to each other, you are physically safe with me, your material possessions are safe with me. What would happen on this planet if everyone had a commitment not to steal? Whole economic systems would have to be changed. It would transform the world. And the third training, during the time that we're here together, to refrain from harming through our sexuality, but instead to practice practice sexuality that causes separation and pain, but rather a sexuality that brings love and connection. We know how much harm happens on this planet because of sexual misconduct. During this time that we're here together, we're saying to each other, you're sexually safe with me. This is important for all of us. It must be especially important for women, because you are so often the objects of sexual violence and harassment. What would this planet be like if all of us could walk through this world without any fear of being harmed sexually? It would be a different world. And the fourth training, to undertake the training not to harm through our speech. We have all harmed and been harmed through words, sometimes terribly harmed. But rather to say, as the Buddha recommends, to say what is true, what is necessary, and what is kind. If you could get all three, get all three of those, it works. Again, a different world if we all committed to honesty, to not lying, just that one. And then the final of these trainings in non-harming is, during this time together, to refrain from the use of intoxicants that can distort the mind, but rather to commit to developing clarity of mind and openness of heart. Those are both the means and the ends of our practice. Clear mind, open heart. So we create a society that we want to see in the world by excluding no one and being kind to all. Thank you.
So we've all gone through extraordinary effort, I'm sure, to clear this space for retreat. And we've contemplated the precepts, we've contemplated the refuges, and we've begun to settle in as a community for this brief period of time. Once on retreat, one of my teachers gave the best observation. He said, you've been running for the train, carrying your luggage. Now that you're on the train, you can put down your bags. This is really kind of the demarcation of where we'll shift from sort of the external to cultivate the internal. And it might be nice just before we begin, as we mentioned, part of practicing social silence is to avoid eye contact. And this is not done in any way to deny anyone our compassion, but to really draw the attention inward. It can be just sort of socially awkward. If you make eye contact, do you smile, do you wave, do you not smile, do you not wave? So by sort of keeping the eyes cast down and self-contained, while holding a place of compassion for self and others, creates an extraordinary force field here. So you might, before we begin this meditation, which will mark our movement inward and into silence, you might like just to look around at who's here in our community. And just try and take in as many different faces as you can see. And wishing all these beings well. And then when you're ready, you can close your eyes. I'll be offering some of the fundamental instructions for our practice. And we'll have some time for sitting. And then there'll be the meditation bell, at which point you can remain in meditation as long as you like. But this will be the sign of our moving into this practice of noble silence. The fundamental teaching is to rest your attention in the senses and the body. And you might just contemplate now the sense doors wide open, just feeling the vibration of the sounds around you. Externally opening your attention to this whole realm of touch, the texture of the air against your skin. The points of contact between your body and chair or cushion or bench, or the feet against the floor. Acknowledging the sense door of smell and taste. The perception of light beyond your closed eyes. Sensing inwardly this sense of warmth or coolness, vibration or tingling or pulse. Sensing how intimately you can feel the breath moving inside. And you might sense as well the brain processing the vibrancy of shifting, changing, constantly moving sensation. What does it feel like inside to receive the moment directly through the senses? Another element of sensing is relaxed, embodied awareness. Could you soften the muscles of the face? Feeling the lips and the tongue. The quality of receptivity in the palms.